So we're looking this morning at what is wisdom and what is foolishness. And ordinarily you wouldn't think this would be much of a question. Wisdom is being wise, foolishness is being foolish. And I suppose that does answer the question, but it doesn't really answer what we need to think about. I was talking to Heather about this and saying that one of the biggest problems with talking about wisdom is, well, what is wisdom? Wisdom in our current culture frequently comes across as just being clever or being sensible sometimes, whereas wisdom, I think, is deeper than that. We don't use wisdom very much. We don't talk about our political leaders or our judges or anything else exercising wisdom. And I think it's because we don't really know what to do with it. And at the same time, we don't really talk about foolishness very much either. Sometimes we tell our children they're being foolish, but I don't think it's limited just to children. I think it's possible to be foolish at any age. Well, I know I can be. And sometimes we're foolish in a playful way, and that's, you know, something altogether different yet. Because as I was looking at our lectionary readings, the one that struck me again was in 1 Corinthians, where Paul talks about foolishness. In the translation I was looking at, it begins with, "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing." And we think, so how? What does that mean? I mean, the message of the cross is something that we understand at many levels, that Christ came and was crucified for our benefit, that he came because that was the way that salvation needed to be accomplished, subsequently rose again. But the message of the cross is foolishness. I don't think any of us want to hitch our wagon to foolishness. That don't only make sense. We don't want to be known as people who are foolish, let alone fools. Well, that's something that shows up in our culture a little more frequently. So why would the message of the cross be foolishness? Well, what's interesting is that Paul immediately takes a run at the difference between wisdom as some people think it is and what wisdom actually is by quoting Isaiah, where he says, and this is God speaking, that "I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate." And then Paul goes on, where is the wise man, where is the scholar, and all of that, and begins to start playing with our ideas of what is wisdom. Often what is wisdom is taking care of yourself. You make wise choices so your bills are paid, so your kids are taken care of, and there's nothing, and I'm not saying these things are wrong, but often that's the beginning and the end of it. Is that wisdom is caring for what we can see and what we know needs to be cared for. And so if there is a place where the language of wisdom is used, it sometimes shows up in financial terms, wise investments, or a wise investment counselor. And this is all about dealing with our current needs. And there's obviously nothing wrong with taking care of our current needs. We have to do that. But is that the sum total of wisdom? If our bills are paid, our children are taken care of, is that the beginning and the end of what a wise person does? And the answer is no. Just so we can get it right out there. I mean, the answer is no. Wisdom is more than that. And what Paul is at pains to point out for us is that God's wisdom is different than ours. Because our wisdom has fundamental limits that are built in that we simply can't escape. We are always limited by who we are and by the bodies that we have and the limits of our knowledge and the limits of our experience. God's wisdom has none of those limits. I mean, Paul, even in a flight of hyperbole, which I've always enjoyed, says, "For the foolishness of God is wiser than man's wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than man's strength." And the first thing I thought, of course, is when is God foolish? And I don't think Paul is saying that God is foolish, but he said, sort of, if he was, like, the foolishness of God is more profound than the wisdom of people. So if we want to pursue actual wisdom, we need to go to God for the example, not just to other people. People can help us make better decisions. They can provide wisdom for us. But Paul is pretty clear here that the ultimate source of wisdom is God. It's not our experience. It's not our own desires. It's not our own sense of what needs to be done. Because what God is interested in isn't what the world is interested in. Paul also says, but God chose the foolishness, the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. And you might be thinking, well, foolish, what is that? Like, what could he be choosing? And that's where I think the editors or the committee that puts together the lectionary readings made a possibly even an inspired choice in pairing this epistle reading with our gospel reading, with the Beatitudes. And we look at the Beatitudes, and from the perspective of the world, they make no sense whatsoever. I mean, some of them we can understand, you know, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Okay, that makes sense. Hardly anybody who suffers loss mourns for the rest of their life. They eventually receive some form of comfort, and we look at it, and we can just come up with all kinds of psychological reasons for it. So that one sort of makes sense. But when you look at the Beatitudes overall, they're kind of peculiar. They don't make sense. You know, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Well, like one person at least has said, yeah, they inherit a plot about 6 feet deep. Well, we all inherit that one. But how does this work? Like, why would Jesus, in his most extended teaching in all of the Gospels, begin with these Beatitudes, where we have things like, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. That doesn't make any sense at a human level. Persecution and blessing don't go together. At least not for most of us. But what we lose sight of if we read it solely from our perspective is the point that Paul was making, that God's wisdom is fundamentally different than the world's wisdom. The world's wisdom is constrained to a personal level and is involved with things like comfort, planning for the future, taking care of responsibilities, none of which, as I've said before and will say again, none of which are wrong, but they're limited. God says that wisdom is living a life that is characterized by what we read in the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is something that a wise person might want, but would a wise person pursue it by being poor in spirit? Or by being poor at all? Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Our world is not given to demonstrating mercy or kindness. If it was, we wouldn't notice so obviously when people do this sort of thing. Heather happened to be watching a YouTube video this morning. It's one I haven't seen yet. But a high school football team who much to the consternation of their coach and their fans, and for that matter the other team, were about to score a touchdown and intentionally fell down at the 1-yard line. What's going on? Well, what was going on was a member of their football team is a young man with developmental delays and some other issues. They said he has boundary issues. He hugs everybody. So he's just this very pleasant young man, but he's on the football team sort of as a gift more than anything else. Well, what the team did is they decided he was going to score a touchdown, and so they downed the ball on the 1 yard line. In the video, you can barely see him as he's given the ball because the rest of the team collapses around him and just pushes over the goal line. An extraordinary story of kindness. If the wisdom of the world was such that these sorts of things happened all the time, we wouldn't notice them when they go on YouTube. But we notice them because that kind of behavior is so unusual. Our society isn't given to mercy, to kindness, to self-sacrifice. It happens, of course, but that's not what we do in the main. And God says that wisdom is behaving as God would, not as we would. It makes no sense to people if you rejoice when you're persecuted. They'll think you're kind of mentally ill, I suppose, or at least that you're somehow living in denial or some catchphrase. Jesus says, blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. Wisdom is making decisions that aren't constrained by this world and our own time frame. Foolishness is living as if this life is the beginning and end of everything. We can be foolish in lots of other ways too, but foolishness really is thinking that this world, what we can see and touch, what we can hear and taste and smell, are the input of our senses, is the beginning and the end of everything. There is more. There's so much more. And to pursue the more is the true wisdom. But we don't know what that is unless we look to the source of wisdom, to God, who says that much of the world's wisdom is foolishness, and much that the world considers foolish is wise. Sometimes people will look at the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes in particular, and they say, is it even possible to live that way? And I'm not here this morning to say that it's easy, that everybody can do it. It's just a matter of setting your mind at it. The Sermon on the Mount is the goal to which we live our lives. Whether we achieve all of it or not really is less important than whether we continue to move towards it. Living a life characterized by wisdom is not one where our mutual funds are all in order. Not that there's anything wrong with those, of course. But living a life of wisdom is one that takes into account what God considers valuable. Caring for widows and orphans, whether you get a tax receipt for it or not. Being merciful, whether anyone else notices or not. Being willing to make decisions that will result in persecution for the sake of God's kingdom. Those are the characteristics of wisdom. That's what wisdom is living the life that God has called us to, even when those on the outside think it's kind of crazy or think it's even foolishness, because the world has inverted wisdom and foolishness often, and pursues those things that God says are unimportant. Reputation, wealth, these things that God says, when the ultimate decisions and judgments are made, these will just be burnt up like the grass. Choose for yourself those things that will last forever. And the things that we choose aren't things at all. They're actions, their behaviors, their beliefs. Wisdom is listening carefully to what God says matters, and then living a life where what God says matters is demonstrated to the world around us, even when they think we're kind of crazy. Even when they say we're being foolish. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than the wisdom of the world. I think I know where I want to end up. I'm okay being called foolish now and then if I'm doing it for the right reasons. Because ultimately, the pursuit of the wisdom of God is what gives us that life of meaning and what provides that opportunity to demonstrate that we know who He is and that we're following Him with all we have. Amen.